The handouts are more in depth, but maybe this overhead might help a little bit to give you a little overview of Francis Schaeffer and what he was about. With most Christian thinkers, if you just examine their thought, that would cover pretty much their whole ministry. Okay, that was not Schaeffer. Schaeffer was more than just a thinker. He was also a doer. Okay? He was very well read. He was brilliant. But he was also a guy who got down there in the trenches and did this thing called Christianity on a regular basis. His Labrie Fellowship, which basically means the shelter, his Labrie Fellowship in Switzerland was a place where intellectual dropouts from all over the world, but especially from Europe, where they could go, and it was like your last stop before suicide. If you were an intellectual and believe there is no God, there's no meaning to life, there's no morality, no right and wrong, there's no hope whatsoever, no right and wrong, and you just feel like giving up and committing suicide. A lot of people would say, look, before you do that, there's this little preacher by the Swiss Alps named Francis Schaeffer. Talk to him. And you go to visit Schaeffer, he would basically, you know, he'd give you a place to sleep. Sometimes they'd have 5, 6, 7, 15, 20 different people staying at his place. He would preach a couple times a week. He'd preach on Sunday in a little chapel. And then he'd give a few lectures throughout the week. And then he'd go on hikes and just talk theology and philosophy with these people. And he'd break bread with them. They'd have fireside chats, really sitting down by a fireside, you know. He spoke the truth in love. And that's what we're commanded to do. So he wasn't just trying to win arguments. Okay? He cared enough to listen to people. He cared enough to love people. He cared enough to feed them. Okay? By the way, too, it wasn't like a place to go for handouts. They needed a lot of work over there. They didn't have a whole lot of money, so if you came over to visit him, you work alongside him, too. You know, you do the yard work with him and things of that sort. But through his Labrie Fellowship, it got to the point where some of the major secular magazines in America began to call Francis Schaeffer the apostle to the intellectual dropouts. And intellectuals all over the world who were thinking of giving up on everything, all of a sudden they would say, wait a minute, maybe I ought to give Christianity one more try and talk to this this little guy in Switzerland. Now, he was actually raised in Philadelphia. He was actually an American guy, but he just felt led to go over Switzerland. Now, that's one of the reasons why he's so important for us to study is because he dealt with European intellectuals, and their thought tended to be 20 to 40 years ahead of the rest of the Europeans. But the European intellectuals, they were about 20 to 40 years ahead of American intellectuals, who were about 20 to 40 years ahead of the rest of Americans. In other words, the kind of intellectuals that Schaeffer was ministering to in the 1960s and 1970s are the kind of lay people that we're going to be ministering to in the next 5 to 10 years. In fact, I think we're starting to see it now. I take debates on college campuses in defense of Christianity, in defense of God's existence. And 10 years ago, if you believed in the existence of any kind of a God, you would side with the Christian instead of siding with the atheist in one of those debates. Now when I debate, even just on community colleges, it seems like even people who believe in the existence of some kind of God in America, if they're not Christians, they will end up siding with the atheists. I had debated God's existence at Bellevue Community College. It seemed that the crowd was really upset with me because I was calling God a he, and I believed in absolute moral values. They viewed me as being intolerant because I made a statement. Can you believe I was actually so bold to make a statement that I believed that rape and incest are wrong for all people at all times in all places? And they thought that that was being intolerant. Okay? So, it is amazing how people's ideas are changing. And Schaefer was on the cutting edge because he was dealing with many of these European thinkers when these ideas were first coming out. And now these ideas have not only made it into the American universities and the American colleges, now they have made it into the American mainstream. And I think we can learn a lot from Schaefer as we try to deal with these people. One of the first things that I'd like to talk about here is what Schaefer called the line of despair. The line of despair. It's kind of like there's a line, and everything under that line is despair, okay? And how do you escape that despair? And he was claiming that modern man had fallen below this line of despair, okay? Now, what Schaefer called modern man, by the way, has a lot in common with what philosophers call the postmodern man today. Okay? Because what Schaefer called the modern man, he was talking about existentialists. People, thinkers who said, look, God doesn't exist, therefore there's no such thing as truth. There's no such thing as right and wrong. There's no such thing as meaning in life. Life is without meaning. Why don't I just kill myself? And then some of them, in order to escape that despair, would take a leap of blind faith into the non-rational realm and just create meaning for their lives. Okay? Jean-Paul Sartre, French existentialist, and his friend Albert Camus, another French existentialist, were examples of this. Nowadays, even existentialism is going out the window, but we still see the same denial of absolute truth in postmodern circles. But now they talk about a community. It's not an individual taking a leap of blind faith into the non-rational realm. Now it's an entire community. And that community doesn't have to be the people that you live near. Okay? You can be part of like some postmodern communities, the gay community, which is made up of homosexuals all over the country and all over the world. They gather around a narrative. See, the postmodernist says there is no such thing as truth. All we have are nothing but stories, okay? But whatever the case, if when we run into these postmodern people, and they're all over the place on college campuses today, the fact of the matter is they deny the existence of absolute truth, okay? And it's really crazy too, because you know I'll be talking with them, they'll say there is no absolute truth, and then I've reminded people, well, if that statement is true, then it's an absolute truth. Otherwise, then it's just false. So whether it's, you know, if the statement is true, it refutes itself. It's a self-refuting statement. Therefore, there has to be absolute truth. And then there's some people who say, okay, maybe there's absolute truth, but man can't know it. But the statement, man can't know truth, if that statement is true, then man can know something. And that is that he can't know truth. So that self-refutes. So if there's only two things human beings know, or should know, if we were just logical thinkers, is one, absolute truth exists, and two, I can know it. Okay? But today we live in a day and age where people are denying the existence of absolute truth and man's ability to know it. And Schaefer dealt with these people long before we saw them on the American scene. So Schaefer argued that what he called modern man had abandoned the idea of absolute truth. He used an example of Hegel, a philosopher who rejected the concept of antithesis. Antithesis meant that if a statement is true, then the contrary of that statement is by definition false. What Hegel did, Hegel came on the scene and said, look, you could have an idea that is true, and then a contrary idea that opposes it, and as time goes on, they can be synthesized and form a new truth. In fact, Hegel viewed human history as the unfolding of truth, okay? And some people try to oversimplify his thought. Marx oversimplified his thought. But whatever the case, it is clear that Hegel denied absolute unchanging truth, something that is true for all people at all times and in all places. Okay? And now just think about what that does to Christianity. You tell your friend, Jesus is my Savior. He died on the cross for my sins. And your friend says, well, that's okay. That's true for you, but it doesn't have to be true for me. See, once we water down absolute truth, then even the statement God exists is no more true than the statement God does not exist. Okay? And now, originally, atheists tried to deny God's existence and hold on to truth. But as time went on, they realized what Friedrich Nietzsche, the German philosopher, had said, that if there is no God, then there is no truth. There's no right and wrong. And so now we're living in a day and age where people who have rejected God are reaching the same conclusion, therefore there is no absolute truth. Now, Kierkegaard, Danish philosopher and theologian, he argued that this synthesis, this new truth, okay, could not be achieved through reason alone, but instead a leap of blind faith into the non-rational realm was needed. Now, Kierkegaard was a Christian existentialist. I'm not even sure if he was a true Christian. I would argue that he wasn't. Some Christian philosophers would argue that he was. But whatever the case, Kierkegaard argued that it's not important whether Jesus literally rose from the dead or not. All that was important was that you really believe that he did with passion. Okay? Now, let me say what was good about Kierkegaard. In his day and age, all Christianity was redefined as just believing with your mind a creed. A set of beliefs. I believe in one God, the creator of heaven and earth, and in his Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, and on and on. You just believe that in your head, and that makes you a Christian. It doesn't have to influence your life, whatever. And Kierkegaard said, that's not the way it is. And so Kierkegaard argued for the other extreme, that Christianity isn't head knowledge, it's just the passions of the heart. Subjective belief was more important than objective truth. Now, in actuality, Schaeffer argued that Christianity is both propositional truth. Jesus did die on the cross for our sins. He is God incarnate. He did rise from the dead. He will return. Okay? He alone is Savior. There are propositional truths we need to accept with the mind, but then we also need to enter into that personal relationship with Him. And so it's not either or. It's not the mind or the will. It's both the mind and the will. Okay? And that's what Schaeffer argued for. Kierkegaard went too far in the other direction. And so it was kind of like Kierkegaard was saying, yeah, modern man has taken us to the point where there's nothing but despair, but we can't live there. Let's take a leap of blind faith into the non-rational realm. Okay? Well, eventually existentialists became non-Christian existentialists of the Jean-Paul Sartre and Albert Camus type. And so you ended up with this modern existentialism, the idea that life is absurd and meaningless, and we must create meaning for ourselves. You know, it's amazing. Sartre argued like this, no God, therefore no meaning in life. However, man desperately needs meaning in life. Let's actualize ourselves by creating meaning for our lives, even though there's no good reason to do it. You know, when I look at that, I say, well, wait a minute. If we so desperately need meaning in life, maybe there is a God. Maybe you ought to start heading back towards Christianity, not further away from it. Sartre argued that it makes no difference whether you helped an elderly lady walk across the street or you mugged her and stole her purse. The only important thing was you actualized yourself. You gave meaning to your life. Now, that might be good for Sartre, but I don't think the police officer or a judge and a jury would buy it. But whatever the case, once you throw... You see, the existentialist, if God created us, then we come into life defined. We come into life with a definition, with a nature, with an essence. God defines the parameters of our life. Okay? But if there is no God, then we come into life as a blank check. And we can make ourselves anything we want to be. And that's what Sartre was arguing for. Okay? Now, what was interesting was that Aldous Huxley and Timothy Leary. Timothy Leary was a Harvard professor. He really liked Jean-Paul Sartre's existentialism, but he could not. He said, you know, but Jean-Paul, it's so hard to take that existential leap. And so Dr. Timothy Leary said, why don't we artificially induce it through LSD trips? This was back in the 1960s, and he became the guru for a whole generation of young people who were taking acid trips. I mean, the Beatles, I don't think they ever read Jean-Paul Sartre, but they read Timothy Leary. In fact, Art Linkletter, I don't know how many people, I'm probably dating myself here, but how many people remember him? He's a talk show host. His daughter read Timothy Leary's books, and while taking an LSD trip, she jumped off the roof of a multi-story building to her death. And but the Beatles thought, hey, this is great. Let's take this leap of blind faith through hallucinogenic drugs, and it changed an entire generation. Schaefer was real good at showing that, how the philosophy of one generation will influence the art and the music and eventually the general culture. And the sad thing is, theology is the last thing to be influenced. Instead of theology leading the way, the theologians are kind of just following wherever the world is going. And but Schaefer had tremendous insight into that with the line of despair. And so Schaefer realized that modern man, because he had thrown God out the window, had given up on truth, given up on meaning, and that modern man was left with either despair or a leap of blind faith into the irrational realm to escape that despair. Either or situation. And so Schaefer, that was kind of his starting point in dealing with them, was recognizing right where they were. Schaefer also argued that this was along the lines of Blaise Pascal, that man's dilemma is that man is both noble and he is cruel. You will see man doing noble things that the animal kingdom doesn't do. You know, you go away on vacation, and even if your next door neighbor is a non-believer, and especially if they're a Mormon, you go away on vacation without telling you they mow your lawn. You know? But human beings do that. We do noble things. We sometimes lay down our lives for others and save the lives of others and put our own lives at risk. But we also do cruel things. You know, the cruelty that human beings do to other human beings, you cannot find that even in the animal kingdom. I remember, you know, reading, and this was several different times, several different kids poured gasoline on their elderly grandmother and set her on fire and watched her burn to death. Now we see kids going to high schools and shooting several students. I even read a true account in a newspaper of a lady who put her little baby in the microwave, and turned it on, and killed her baby. And Schaefer says, you know, how do you explain this? And Schaefer argued that atheistic evolution could not explain it. No matter how hard they try to make us animals know our nobility puts us in a totally different category than the animals. But also our cruelty puts us in a different category. When an animal viciously kills another animal, there's usually a good reason why the animal's doing it. You know, usually it's food, sometimes it's protection, but sometimes human beings just kill other human beings just because they felt like doing it. And so Schaefer would argue that only Christianity offers an adequate explanation that man was created in God's image and therefore noble. But then we had fallen in the garden and therefore we are cruel. And the only way we can get away from this cruel, abnormal state is through salvation in Jesus Christ. By the way, a lot of times when Schaeffer dealt with people, one of his professors was Cornelius Van Til, and Schaeffer changed a lot of the thought of Van Til, or his own, Schaeffer's thought wasn't identical to Van Til's. He made some changes and all. But he did accept what Van Til called borrowed capital. That you can deny the existence of the God of the Bible. You can deny the existence of the Christian God. You can deny that Christianity is true, but you still have to live in God's universe. Because, you know, there's no other universe out there. This isn't Monty Hall and let's make a deal and you get to pick the universe behind door one or behind door two or door three. There's only one universe. It's the real one. So you can deny the real God, but you still got to live in His universe. So it's kind of like, you know, all this talk about, you know, God is dead. Friedrich Nietzsche said God is dead, you know. He wasn't really saying God was alive once and then He died. He was saying Christianity, as the driving force of Western culture, had died. But what Nietzsche's message was to his fellow atheists was that, look, you guys have taken God, you've taken Christianity and thrown it off a bridge. You've thrown God off the bridge to His death. But what Nietzsche told his colleagues was, and this is Nietzsche died in 1900, Nietzsche told his colleagues, what you guys failed to realize is before you threw God off the bridge, you went through His pockets. You borrowed some capital from the Christian God. So, we want to get rid of God, but we want absolute moral values because we still want to call murder wrong because we don't want people murdering us. So let's take that. Oh, and we want absolute truth because we want to find scientific truths and philosophical truths. We even want it to be true that God doesn't exist. Oh, and of course, we want meaning in life. And what Nietzsche tried to warn his colleagues was that if you throw God off the bridge, everything He's got goes with Him. You throw God out, truth goes out the window. Morality goes out the window. Meaning goes out the window. And Schaeffer was real quick to point that out. No one can reject the God of the Bible and live consistently with a rejection of the God of the Bible. If you watch them long enough, you will find inconsistencies. They will say God doesn't exist, but then they will live like He does. This Friday, I have a debate at Princeton University, and the gentleman I'm going to be debating, Elliot Ratzman, believes that there is no absolute rights or wrongs. Each culture determines what is right and what is wrong. Yet he constantly goes to other cultures and protests on their soil. See, he can't live consistently with his view. He's living as if, even though he denies it verbally, he's living as if there are an absolute moral standard that is above all cultures. The fact of the matter is that there is. It is God's moral law. And he denies that, yet without even realizing it, he lives like that is true. Schaeffer argued for the mannishness of man, that our personality and our ability to verbalize ideas places man above the animal kingdom. Schaeffer argued that since we are created in God's image, God can communicate propositionally to us. All proposition means that God can communicate to us through statements. God wants to write a book, He can use human authors and write a book. Once you acknowledge the existence of a personal God, He has no problem writing a book for us. Okay, Schaeffer argued that only a personal God could produce man. That if you deny a personal God, then you must also deny the nobility of man or take a leap of blind faith in the non-rational realm and just pretend that man has nobility. And another way of saying this is there is no way to have human rights in a world without God. The whole dignity of being human comes from the fact that we were created in God's image. So So if you reject God, there's no basis for human rights or for human dignity. And so Schaefer pointed that out. To the question, what is the purpose of man? Schaefer said that modern man has no answer. Christianity, though, has the answer. It tells us that through Christ, our personal relationship with the personal God is restored and our life takes on the meaning that God intended for us to have. Schaefer argued that moral values make no sense in a world without absolutes, and that apart from Christian presuppositions or beliefs, man fails to distinguish reality from unreality, man from animal, and right from wrong. Schaefer argued that finite, fallen man cannot find certain knowledge if he autonomously begins with himself. Okay? Only in Scripture can finite man find certain, though not exhaustive, knowledge. We don't know everything there is to know about everything, but we can know some truths because God has revealed them to us in His Word. Schaefer argued that we have no final answers in regard to truth, morals, or epistemology, man's knowledge and how man's theory of knowledge and how he knows things without God's revelation in the Bible. And so Schaefer argues that only Christianity offers an adequate explanation of the universe and of man. And he argues that even the atheist must live in God's universe. Now, let me talk just a little bit about Schaefer's method of apologetics. Schaefer's method of apologetics is what I would call verificational apologetics. In other words, Schaefer views Christianity as a hypothesis. Okay? It's kind of like he looks out over the world and he's standing next to an atheist and he says, okay, here's my worldview. It's called Christianity. Now let's test my worldview by the data that's out there. And let's test your worldview and see which worldview has more plausibility, which is more reasonable. Okay? And so basically, he allows his Christian beliefs to be tested much like that of a scientific hypothesis. Okay? Now, the test for truth that Schaefer had are, number one, a worldview must be non-contradictory. Okay, so Schaefer wouldn't entertain ideas like there is no truth, because that's a self-contradictory statement. So number one, it's got to be non-contradictory, but it also has to explain the phenomenon in question. Okay? Somebody could say, explain to me this TV. What's it all about? I've never seen a TV. What's this all about? I could say 1 plus 1 equals 2. Okay, 1 plus 1 equals 2 is not contradictory. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't explain this TV. And so you could have a worldview that doesn't contradict itself, but if it doesn't explain human experience, what good is it? So not only does it have to be non-contradictory, but it also has to explain the phenomenon in question. And then finally, in Schaefer's test for truth, we must be able to live consistently with our theory. Livability. And Schaefer would argue, any non-Christian, somewhere along the line, they will not be able to live consistently with their worldview. Somewhere their actions will contradict their words, their beliefs. When Schaefer looks out at the world, he says the possible answers are this. And there's four of them. One, that everything came from nothing. Schaefer says this is absurd. He doesn't even give it a couple sentences in his works. Anybody who thinks everything popped into existence totally out of nothing, totally without a cause, that just does not make sense. Okay? Sad thing is, what Schaefer didn't know is that some leading philosophers and scientists would actually entertain that impossibility, But whatever the case, let me just, I'll just talk about nothing for a little bit. I don't want to spend too much time on nothing, but so I'll tell you something about nothing. Nothing is nothing. Therefore, nothing can do nothing. Therefore, nothing can cause nothing. So if something exists and it had a beginning, something else had to cause it to come into existence. Nothing could not be the cause. Everything had an impersonal start, and that somehow the impersonal plus time plus chance have produced a personal man. But Schaefer says this goes against all experience. I mean, we have persons producing impersonal effects, but when have you ever seen an impersonal effect, like a tree or a mound of dirt, producing a personal effect? Just, there is nothing in our experience that would tell us that would be the case. A third possibility is that personality is an illusion. You'll find this from Eastern thought, Hinduism, Buddhism. Personality is an illusion. But the fact of the matter is, Schaefer argues, man cannot live consistently with that idea. Man has to live like he is a personal being who has an intellect, emotions, and will, and that as a human being who has personality, he has dignity, or she has dignity and deserves to be treated in a certain way. And so Schaefer argues that man cannot live consistently with his view. Hindus and Buddhists who may deny the existence of the physical world, they still have to eat physical food in order to live. You know, you could deny, Christian scientists deny the existence of the physical world, but they still have to eat food. And if somebody were to hit them, they would be upset and either fight back or call the police or whatever. So they cannot live consistently with their worldview. And the only other option is that everything had a personal start, and Schaefer said this alone adequately explains the mannishness of man, the personality of man. In other words, personal beings exist, and therefore we need a personal cause. The cause of the universe must himself be a personal being. Okay? And so Schaefer argued along those lines and argued if you reject that, you end up in contradiction. And the contradiction either causes you to despair, or you just take a leap of blind faith into the non-rational realm and just live with your contradictions. Schaefer's method of evangelism, when witnessing, he would start where the non-believer is and bring the non-believer's thought to its logical conclusion. Okay? So he would sit down and say, well, what's your view of God? What do you think about this? What do you think about that? You know, too often we want to cram the Bible down people's throats, but we don't want to give them the time of day. We say, you know, I want you to listen to my religious views, but I'm not going to listen to yours. Schaefer loved people enough to listen to them. And today we got some views. It's hard to keep a straight face to listen to people's views sometimes. But if you love them enough, you can do it. But anyway, he would take their thought and bring it to his logical conclusion, which is either despair. You know, Schaefer would say, well, if your views are correct, there's no meaning to life. How can you even go on living? So the person's left with a choice between despair or a leap of blind faith into the non-rational realm, and then Schaefer would remind them, yeah, but that's really not the rational thing to do. So it's either despair or a leap of blind faith into the non-rational realm or give Christianity a second look. You know, Western culture, you know, we talk about Christianity as being outdated and that type of thing. Schaefer was arguing that modern man didn't even realize if God is dead, not only is truth dead and morality dead and meaning dead, but man is also dead. And so Schaefer argued that if you want to bring back meaning to life, the only way to do that is to acknowledge God as the author of meaning and the creator of man. Couple examples. John Cage was an existentialist musician. And John Cage, he had the ability to play beautiful classical music. But he was an existentialist. He believed that we got here randomly through chance. That there was no God, that there's no meaning to life. And so Cage wanted to get this point across to people in his performances. And so he would do things like he would flip a coin, okay, to determine what the next note would be. Okay, so he would write compositions that made no sense at all. So he'd get up there and it would sound like, you know, 4-year-olds going to town on musical instruments. Okay? People would boo him. Sometimes they would throw lettuce and tomatoes at him. Okay? And then, of course, there'd always be one existentialist out there who'd get the message and would stand up and with a tear rolling down their cheek would applaud and give him a standing ovation while everybody else is trying to lambast him with tomatoes. Okay? And Schaefer argues that most of the people in that audience had the same worldview that he did. And that their anger, they thought they were angry at him. You know, I spent $50 for these tickets and you can't even play a meaningful song. And, you know, they thought they were angry at him. And Schaefer's saying he was just giving them what their worldview. See, if there is no God, guess what? There's no difference between music and non-music. There's no meaning. Music is creativity. No difference between creativity and destruction if there is no God. Cage, sometimes he'd be standing up taking a bow, not only with the crowd boo, but sometimes the orchestra behind him, who had to play this garbage, they started hissing and booing him. One of his songs was called 4 Minutes and 33 Seconds, John Cage. We would sit down at a piano. Well, that's a nice piano up there. He'd sit down at a piano and he'd lift the wooden thing. I'm not a musician, so I don't know what it is. I'll call it a wooden thing. He'd lift the wooden thing up to expose the keys. He'd crack his knuckles, and then he'd start a stopwatch. And he'd wait for 4 minutes and 33 seconds, and then he'd turn it off, and then he'd put the thing down, and then he'd stand up and take a bow as the crowd starts booing, and if they had tomatoes, you know the rest of the story. But you see, what he was saying was, we live in a random universe. There is no God. There's no meaning to life. Therefore, there is no difference between music and non-music. And most of the people in that audience, there could have been atheists in that audience, and they don't even see that if there's no God, then what John Cage did was no less artistic than what Beethoven did. But the thing is, Schaefer points out, John Cage could not live consistently with that worldview. He could do it on a stage, but he was a connoisseur of mushrooms. And Cage openly admitted, if I applied my beliefs in a random chance universe to my eating of mushrooms, I would be dead within a day or two. You know, if he just went out and instead of looking at mushrooms saying, okay, this is poisonous, don't eat this one. Okay, here's a non-poisonous one, I can eat this one. If he acted like everything is random, he would die. And so he said that it bothered him he could not live consistently with his worldview when it came to the eating of mushrooms. Another example that Schaefer gave, he was talking at a college dorm, and a Hindu student began to argue with him. And then Schaefer said, well, if your worldview is correct, because God is ultimately impersonal and beyond moral values, if your God is correct, then there is no difference ultimately between cruelty and non-cruelty. And the Hindu student said, yeah, that's correct. At that point, the tea kettle began to whistle. Hot boiling water was ready for them to make tea. And so one of the other students, as soon as the Hindu student said that, went and grabbed the kettle of hot boiling water and pulled a chair up next to the Hindu student, stood on top of the chair, and held the kettle over the head of the Hindu student. So the Hindu student looked up and asked the obvious, you know, what are you doing? And the other student said, there's no difference between cruelty and non-cruelty. Now, at that point, the Hindu student could have said, okay, I give. I need a new worldview. But he didn't. Schaefer said that he just walked out into the night without a word. We live in a world that has thrown the God of the Bible out the window. We have turned our back on the God of the Bible, and we're just beginning to realize that if the God of the Bible does not exist, there is no difference between cruelty and non-cruelty. And we might, you know, we Americans, we've had this thing called freedom for so long, we might think, oh no, that can't happen, that can't. It has happened. You know, I said Europe is usually, you know, 20 to 40 years ahead of America. Well, Germany is usually 20 to 40 years ahead of Europe. And look what happened in Germany because of the rejection of the Bible. Germany led the way in higher criticism. German theologians were the first ones to question the divine authorship of the Scriptures. They were the first ones to reject Moses as the author of Scriptures. Next thing you know, what came in to fill the void? The Nazi movement. And so we live in a day and age where there's no difference between cruelty and non-cruelty because we've thrown out the God of the Bible, the God of meaning. I think there's a lot that we can learn from Schaefer. But I think the most important point was that what Schaefer called the final apologetic. He quoted from John chapter 13, verse 35, "By this all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another." Schaefer argued that basically the best defense of the Christian faith is to love others with the love of the Lord, to show them that we really care. And I think that's probably the best thing that we can do. Yeah, we need to study their ideas. We need to study the Word. We need to dialogue with them, but when everything's said and done, we need to spend time with people and show them we love them. Christianity is not just handing a tract to somebody on a street corner, telling them to read John 3:16, and then saying, okay, so long, you won't see me again. Sometimes I think we're going to have to sit down and share a cup of coffee and a meal with somebody and actually spend a few months building a relationship with them before they're even going to listen to what we have to say. Paul tells us, speak the truth in love. And I think Francis Schaefer, some of his ideas I didn't agree with him on. But for the most part, I think he had a great system of thought. But when everything's said and done, he spoke the truth in love. He loved people. He loved them enough to study their weird ideas, to learn how to refute them from the Scriptures, spend time with them. But he spoke the truth, never gave up on the truth. He spoke the truth. But he spoke the truth in love, and I don't think we can do any less. I don't even know what time this ends. This ends in, what, another 5 minutes? Another 5 minutes. So we have time for some questions, if anybody has questions. Yes, sir.
Let's see, in Germany, now we have the white Aryan nation. Mm-hmm. And when we take God out of things, that's why we have.
Yeah, the gentleman said that when you take God out of things, you move in that direction that Nazi Germany went in, and he used the example of the white Aryans. Let me just give you my spin on that, though. These white Aryan movements that are out there, okay, they are as bad can be. But the fact of the matter is, they would be almost totally non-existent if it wasn't for all the free airtime they get from CNN. I mean, you get guys who have, you know, some fly-by-night weirdo racist who has 12 guys in his following. But CNN gives the guy enough press, enough airtime, because CNN wants to make everybody think everything is so bad in America that we need bigger and bigger government to protect us. So CNN blows it out of proportion. Next thing you know, the guy's got 20,000 followers from all over the country. So CNN wants to stop that stuff. Just stop giving them the press. I wish CNN would give my church some bad press. My church would quadruple in size with bad press from CNN. So if CNN really wants to see an end to the problem, it should stop. So I really, the sad thing is, I think in most times when there's a wolf in wolf's clothing, most people see it and oppose it. But it's when the wolf comes in sheep's clothing that we get fooled. These white Aryan groups, they're wolves in wolf's clothing. They're not going to get real, real big. Yeah, we should oppose them. No matter how much publicity they get from CNN, we should oppose them and all. But the fact of the matter is, we've got Nazis in our midst that CNN and the media proclaim as being great people. I don't know if he still teaches there, but Peter Singer, an ethicist, was teaching at Princeton. I might even get the chance to meet the guy. He believes if a baby's born with deformities, you kill it. And he's got tenure. This guy's probably making over $100,000 a year, well over $100,000 a year, and he's looked up to as a brilliant thinker, and he's basically saying the same thing. He has the same view that Adolf Hitler has about deformed children. What do you say that? Yeah, well, and that's the whole animal rights movement. My spin on that is, you can't have rights without responsibility. And animals, you know, we don't arrest a lion for killing another lion, you know. So I mean, they don't have. The reason why I don't go out and just slaughter animals indiscriminately is because they're gifts to us from God, and we should be faithful stewards of everything that God has given us. But for someone to have rights, it also comes with responsibilities that animals don't have and can't handle. Yeah.
Do you evangelize
You said pastors who have, okay. I'll tell you, I think we do. I think the tough question is, can we evangelize them while going to their churches? In other words, should we maybe pack up and say, hey, you know, God has left the room, and go to another church, and in the meantime, have a cup of coffee with the guy and evangelize the guy, because if a pastor is deep into postmodernism and into liberal quote unquote Christian thought, chances are the gospel is not even going to be preached from the pulpit. But what's really scary though is there are evangelical pastors that are now going postmodern in their thought, and that is really really bad. And they'll slam me, even in Seattle area, we got a few. They'll slam me over and over again for being too modernistic, being too rational, for talking about defending the Bible in a propositional form, propositional truth. But as they're, and they're saying that I should present the gospel as narrative. But as they're defending their views, I just let them talk for 20 minutes. And then I say, you know, I tell them, I said, tell me a story. I haven't heard a story. You've been talking for 20 minutes. And all I hear is this modernistic, rationalistic, propositional truth. So you can't defend. They can't defend their narratives with a narrative. Why should they expect us to defend the gospel with a narrative? You know, but I do think, one thing I do think that the postmodern corrective on modernism is this. The four spiritual laws work during modernistic times. But as we get away from rationalistic thinking, we can't throw reason out the window, obviously. But we have turned the Bible into four boring principles, the gospel message, when it's the greatest story ever told. So we have to return to the gospel message, its beauty, its mystery, and those poetic aspects, you know, that we just, you know, thrown out the window. We've got to stop pretending that the gospel is boring. Okay? At the same time, does that mean that we throw reason out the window? No, liberal or postmodern pastors, we need to pray for them. We need to witness to them. We need to try to disciple. You know, the American church is hurting when the lay people have to start discipling the pastors. But it's becoming more and more common, so. Yes, sir.
So who should we be looking to now? Jacob, John, who was on the leading edge of theological philosophy?
There's quite a few really solid Christian thinkers that are out there. My old professor Gary Habermas is leading the way with historical evidence for the Christian faith. William Lane Craig, J.P. Moreland, two other bright spots. But as far as the guy that's kind of filling in the gap where that's left by Schaefer, I would say more of Ravi Zacharias, or an Oz Guinness who was a pupil of Francis Schaefer. Those are two examples, but I'm sure if I just sat down and thought about it for a while, I could probably come up with a list of about 25 or 30 guys. There are a lot of guys that are out there that are doing a dynamite job. Unfortunately, the Christian church today, the average Christian would rather buy a book that teaches me how to love me more rather than buying a book that really asks me to actively learn the ideas of the unsaved so that I can really have something, understand where they're coming from and present the gospel to them on their level. We would much rather learn how to love ourselves more.